Okay, hi everybody. We are reaching our 31st Esoteric Astrology Adventure. We have just completed looking at the esoteric rulers and the relationships that they create between constellations via shared ray. For instance, Aries is ruled by Mercury, and Virgo is ruled by the Moon esoterically, and both of those rulers have the fourth ray. So this is different from the way in which the constellations are related exoterically by the ruling planet. For instance, Aries and Scorpio are related because Mars is the ruling planet. Here, Aries and Virgo are related because both of them are ruled esoterically by a planet which expresses the fourth ray. Now we have reached the end of that, and let us see here. So now we are going to work on a different set of relationships, but before we do that, we have to summarize the ones that we've been working on. Remember, I said that the rays in this particular solar system and on this planet hold a preeminent position when compared with the planetary or astrological factors. So we completed at, we're on page 66, and DK gives a note here. He says, note, in connection with disciples and the zodiacal signs, Gemini and Libra are two constellations which, through their rulers, express fifth and seventh ray energy. For some occult reason, they remain unrelated to the other signs. Well, we might ask why it is specifically the fifth and seventh ray, which are represented by planetary rulers only once in the list of the 12 zodiacal signs. Because Venus is the fifth ray, it rules Gemini esoterically, and there's no other fifth ray planet which rules another sign through which one could share a relationship, Gemini and some other constellation. The same for Uranus ruling Libra esoterically. It's a seventh ray planet from the, at least from the personality angle, no, from the soul angle. And there's no other seventh ray planet. Well, Jupiter has quite a bit of seventh ray in it, but for purposes of esoteric astrology at this time, DK refers to Jupiter as a second ray planet, that being its soul ray. Perhaps Jupiter has some higher seventh ray as part of its makeup, or perhaps some lower seventh ray, either personality or monad. DK says, for some occult reason, it almost sounds like he's uncertain, but I'm sure he's not. For some occult reason, these two constellations, Gemini and Libra, remain unrelated to the other signs, to any of the other signs, but they certainly are related to themselves. Because if we go here to the Esoteric Astrology book, okay, and we go to page 332, we will see that it said here, Gemini moves towards Libra. You see that, don't you? Gemini moves towards Libra. And then that's a trine relationship. And then we go to Libra. Libra relates the two in Gemini. With Gemini, we often have a somewhat disconnected, though communicating, a pair of opposites, the two brothers. But Libra fuses or marries these two, brings them into union. So Libra relates the two in Gemini. We notice that both of them do have Venus, either as an esoteric or exoteric ruler. All right, so there is an occult reason why these two air signs are esoterically and via Ray unrelated to any other signs. Of course, we don't have 14 signs of the zodiac. If we wanted to round it out to 14, which we cannot do because zodiacs are heart centers and heart centers have 12 petals only, we might be able to find 5th and 7th ray rulers of two additional signs, but that's a quixotic quest. So we will consider them unrelated, but they will not be unrelated in the next series of relationships that we will be studying. But for the moment, page 67, the relation between the other constellations through the planets as expressing the rays, that's what we've been talking about, not relationship via planetary rulers, but relationship via the rays of the planetary rulers. We have Taurus and Pisces through Vulcan and Pluto, both expressing the first ray, related to the first ray. We have here transmutation of desire into sacrifice. Now, he's taking the two constellations which have been related, and he's showing the meaning of that relationship. So Taurus is the sign of desire. The Buddha came to teach the overcoming of desire and the transmutation of desire into aspiration. And so when desire is transmuted into aspiration, its next transmutation and higher transmutation can be into the sacrifice of Pisces. The sacrifice and of the individual will, the determined, stubborn, fixed self-will of Taurus under a lower expression of Vulcan into the divine will expressed through Pisces. The Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane was acquiescing in a Piscean, a high Piscean way when he said, "Father, not my will, but thine be done." Very interestingly, we have the world savior here. We have the Buddha as one of the world saviors along the wisdom line and the Christ along the love line. The sign of the Christ is particularly Pisces. The sign of the Buddha, particularly Taurus, just as Hercules has Scorpio, particularly as his sign. So the Taurus-Pisces relationship is a very high one, and it relates to the world savior or the generation of world saviors. Okay, there's we have two constellations related via the second ray, the Sun-Jupiter connection. Development of individual consciousness into world consciousness, or we might call it universal consciousness. Thus, the man becomes not the world savior, but a world server. Emergence of the world server, this is Aquarius is the great sign of service. Water of life am I poured forth for thirsty men. That is a serving attitude, pouring forth eventually all the energies of the crown center once the law of service is involved. The synthesized energies of the crown center available for everyone, pouring forth upon the just and the unjust. Okay, Leo and Aquarius through Sun and Jupiter. We've descended a little bit from the world savior to the world server. Okay, let's go a little farther. We have Sagittarius and Capricorn. They are related through the esoteric ruler of Sagittarius, the Earth, and the esoteric ruler of Capricorn, Saturn. Both of them Ray 3 planets. Earth has a Ray 3 personality, and Saturn a Ray 3 soul. The one-pointed disciple becomes the initiate. This is fairly straightforward. Sagittarius is the one-pointed disciple able to deflect all manner of distraction and diversion and diversification, that which would lead him from his goal, and that's what it takes to become the true initiate in Capricorn, climbing the mountain of initiation 5 different times and maybe more, but at least concerning initiation 1 and 5, 1 through 5, but particularly initiation 3, the initiate. Okay, we go further. Aries and Virgo through Mercury and the Moon. Mercury, the esoteric ruler of Aries, the Moon, though a non-sacred planet, the esoteric ruler of Virgo, are related to Ray 4, harmonizing the cosmos and the individual through conflict, producing unity and beauty. Well, in this case, we have to realize that Aries is quite a universal sign. And the individual Christ is related to Virgo. In a sense, the cosmic Christ is related to Aries, the Lamb slain from the foundations of the world. And Virgo stands for the birth of the Christ within the human heart. But notice how necessary conflict is, preceding unity and beauty, because through conflict, the opposites engage and get to know each other and to find those aspects of themselves which can actually merge into harmony. So the struggle of the artist, the torment of creation, these seem almost necessary in the present day anyway, before the production of unity and beauty, taking the pain, the dissonance, inner chafing, and turning that malaise, that discomfort, that irritation, that friction into unity and beauty. Unity particularly connected with the second ray and beauty with the fourth, but really both of those are connected. Unity and beauty are connected with both the fourth ray and the second ray. So we're talking about the birth pangs of the second birth. Well, you know, the pangs of birth are particularly related to Virgo, but who knows about the birth pangs of the cosmic Christ? So these two are related from a cosmic perspective and an individual perspective. The cosmic Christ is Aries, the individual Christ is Virgo. I sometimes think of the cosmic nature of Aries. I think about India, ruled in its soul nature by Aries, and the great concept of Brahman and Parabrahman that it has given, the absolute one all-embracing identity. Aries is a sign which can be applied to a consciousness of vast scope. At the same time, it is the suffering of the larger whole, the sacrifice, the lamb, Aries the lamb slain from the foundation of the world for the sake of a great bestowal of spirit, Aries, into matter. And of course, Virgo stands for the matter aspect. They have a very interesting relationship, which is developed by the Tibetan, also in other places in the book. It's a good thing we can watch all these visuals. They are very important. Okay, and we move on. The cosmic and the individual Christ, okay. And we move on to Cancer and Scorpio. They share the Ray 6 rulership. Neptune esoterically ruling Cancer, Mars, though an orthodox non-sacred ruler, rather a non-sacred ruler, is nonetheless the esoteric ruler of Scorpio. So the Ray 6 unites them. The principle of desire is very strong in both of these constellations. and we have here the transformation of the mass consciousness ruled by Cancer into the inclusive consciousness of the disciple. Interesting that Scorpio should be associated with inclusive consciousness. Usually in Cancer we have the whole is seen as one, and that is certainly a vastly inclusive consciousness, but this is the way it is given. The disciple triumphs not only over his instinctual tendencies of the mass consciousness, he triumphs over his strictly individual consciousness ruled by the lower level of Leo. When I say talk about the lower level, I'm really talking about the lower method of response to the gamut of possibilities and qualities offered by the constellation Leo. I would call attention to the fact that in tabulation 4, the relationship is between the planets which rule, and in tabulation 5, the emphasis is laid upon the conditioning ray. Well, we've been discussing that. In a way, the rays are more esoteric than either of the planets, and even more esoteric than the zodiacal constellations. This we learn in the 10th chapter of a treatise on white magic, when there are certain solar lords who are ray lords, who occupy or influence the human being from a higher perspective than do the zodiacal signs, though we have also seen that the zodiacal signs can be related as well to the soul. DK has emphasized this over and over again, so we might ask ourselves, what soul qualities are we deriving from the zodiacal signs which are found in our chart? And also to the monad. I showed you that quote about the influence of the zodiacal signs upon the monad. And under the law of assembly, I would say during the full moon period, the energies of the zodiacal signs are gathered into Shambhala for distribution. So, if I were to look here, I don't know if it's necessary to repeat it, but zodiacal Shambhala. Well, there are several. There are several. Let's see if we can... Zodiacal energies pass through Shambhala and are related to the first ray of will and power and affect the monad. Okay, so that's on page 411. All right. Now we go on to page 68, and we have another tabulation. This is an important tabulation, I think, also... it's a tabulation which is corresponding to a tabulation on page 490, but here we have the three rulers all together, with Aries, Orthodox Mars, esoterically for the disciple Mercury, and Uranus rules the second of the liberated hierarchies on the cosmic astral plane. I believe the watchword there is unity through effort. I think we can perhaps, if we have to flash on it, we can do so in this way. Yeah, unity through effort, Aries, the numbers 2 and 11 particularly. Taurus is ruled by Venus initially, but Vulcan in the esoteric position with regard to the disciple. And Vulcan again for the third of the liberated hierarchies, as we see. Vulcan is the ruler. Notice it doesn't show the ruler here, as it does when we're dealing with the manifested creative hierarchies, those upon the cosmic physical plane. Here the ruler is shown, but not so, although DK tells us what it is, light through knowledge. And, you know, light through knowledge. Venus is much associated with the fifth ray and with knowledge, and Vulcan with the blazing light, burnishing the shield of Mars, we are told. Vulcan has to do with that blaze of light, which can be experienced at the third initiation, and which St. Paul apparently experienced, as DK confirms that he was blinded for 3 days on the road to Damascus, and that's an inner blaze of Vulcanian light. And really, when Vulcan and Venus come together, that is the ruler of the head center and the ruler of the Ajna center, the blaze of light shines forth, especially, I would say, for certain ray types, maybe for first ray types, because soul fusion results in illumination, whereas for the second ray type, soul fusion results in imagination, and for the third ray types, in empowerment. There's a kind of a ring around a rosy going there. The first ray of power slips into the second ray position, gains illumination. The second ray of illumination slips into the third ray of imagination. And the third ray of imagination rises towards the first ray of empowerment. Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, in the section on the techniques of fusion. With Gemini, we have Mercury in the orthodox position. Orthodox, we will always recognize as what conventional astrology tells us. We have Venus for the disciple, uniting the soul and personality, and we have the Earth, interestingly enough. This is the fourth of the liberated creative hierarchies, ruled by Earth. The keynote here is desire for duality. And upon the Earth, the great experiment will work out, and the dualities will be reconciled very much through the agency of Mercury and Venus, which form with the Earth a very important triangle, quite apart from the fact that they are the rulers of Gemini. We are going down the list of creative hierarchies. I think you can see that. So the Earth is sometimes called the field of experience, but in this case, I would estimate that Gemini, the head of the cosmic Christ, is such an important constellation when it comes to rendering the Earth a sacred planet. And I wouldn't be surprised if this particular hierarchy, ruled by Gemini, and related to the Earth, is not instrumental in helping the Earth become a sacred planet. We have the fifth, almost liberated creative hierarchy, which is still focused upon the logoic plane, or the higher cosmic ether. The moon is the exoteric ruler, having to do with the lunar vehicles, which are coming from another chain altogether. These vehicles are formed under a lunar impulse, and then Neptune is found for both the disciple, widening the compassion and helping the disciple aspire towards the Buddhic plane, which Neptune also rules. And Neptune is the hierarchical ruler, which has very much to do not only with the monadic plane, but with the desire for incarnation as it takes shape upon the cosmic astral plane. I think we see that here. We see veiling the Christ. The true Christ consciousness is much more found upon the cosmic astral plane than it is upon the cosmic physical plane. Okay, so... so those are the rulers as related to the first four signs, and I think we'll find Pisces also related to the liberated hierarchies. It is the first and highest of the liberated hierarchies. But now we go to Leo, and we have a triple sun here. It's perhaps the only constellation ruled by the same quote-unquote planet, but I don't think we should confine ourselves only to the undiscovered non-sacred secondary planet veiled by the sun, because in a very significant way Leo is connected with the true and real sun. In the first case, the sun might be considered veiling Jupiter, which has a very special relationship to the sun. It is probably the planet which is most closely related to our solar logos, just as Venus, I would say, is most closely related to the Sirian logos, and so for other planets being related to other solar logoi who are part of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. For the disciple, the sun is veiling Neptune, which opens the heart center to receive the solar fire and the energy of the heart of the sun. And for the true initiate, the high initiate, and in relation to the hierarchy, the sun is the ruler of the first creative hierarchy of divine lives, At the same time, the sun is veiling Uranus. So when we look at this, well, I don't know, should we say the sun is veiling Uranus, perhaps? In relation to Leo, it does veil Uranus, but in relation to the sea of fire over which the planet, the so-called planet, the sun rules, it could be considered as veiling Vulcan as well, that first ray planet connected with flame. So both Uranus and Vulcan finding a way, I think, to be part of the relationship to the first creative hierarchy, but when we come to dealing with Leo per se, the sun is definitely the ruler, the ruler veiling Uranus. And DK in the Leo chapter talks quite a bit about the relationship of the electric fire of Uranus, a preeminently first-ray planet, the electric fire of Uranus related to Leo. I called Uranus a first-ray planet because it is a first-ray planet monadically, although from the solar perspective, every indication is it's a seventh-ray planet. We then come to Virgo. It has three rulers, Mercury, exoterically. We all know that, the intelligent, discriminating Virgo, so skillful in the realm of matter. And here a non-sacred planet, the Moon, or whatever fourth-ray planet the Moon veils, is the esoteric ruler, but really, in this particular case, the Moon is veiling both Vulcan and Neptune. In this case, we're talking about purifying the physical Vulcan and purifying the emotional Neptune. We're talking about the will and the endurance of Vulcan to open the Christ, individual Christ consciousness under Neptune. Finally, we look at the monadic level, the creative hierarchy of the prototypes of the human monads. They are the divine builders. Jupiter is a building, second ray energy, and is the ruler of that general plane. It is the esoteric ruler of Virgo. It has much to do with the flowering of the Christ consciousness. In a sense, that can be seen upon the monadic plane, because the monads are lords of ceaseless and persevering devotion. Jupiter is the ruler of Pisces. They went forth on a saving mission, the monads did, and Jupiter is the hierarchical ruler of Virgo, emphasizing the redemption of matter through love. We're told Jupiter opens the door of the womb, I presume, to a wider type of Christ consciousness. Excuse me. Now we come to the sign Libra, which is conventionally ruled by Venus, esoterically, in the case of the disciple, ruled by Uranus, telling us that individualities should... A relationship should be based on the true individuality, the true authentic identity. Uranus is always a planet of authenticity. There's many things we could say about it. It rules the sacral center, which is so prominent today in Libran relationships, but also perhaps has much to do with the marriage of souls. Soul marriage, authentic marriages, a higher type of marriage. Saturn is not only the hierarchical ruler of Libra, but also the planet exalted within Libra, so it's tremendously powerful in Libra. It is the ruler of the third creative hierarchy, and it's the Brahmic planet, and it's the head of the five Brahmic creative hierarchies, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We have here the great principle of karma. So perhaps much karma is decided in relation to the third creative hierarchy. Certainly we're told that when a man refuses association with the third creative hierarchy, he's precipitated as his karma into the eighth sphere. And it's curious, in the discussions of Agni Yoga, it discusses a brown spot, which is found upon Saturn and is reserved has kind of a prison. It doesn't use the word prison, but it's reserved for evil doers. They are transported to this particular spot on Saturn. Saturn then has so much to do with negativity and confinement, and so much to do with the beautiful karmic law which prepares all beings for relationship with the love energy. So it's a great balancing factor when found in Libra. I'm thinking about Sir Isaac Newton and his horoscope. He had Libra rising and the sun in Capricorn, which means that, well, he was an initiate, surely, and the Capricorn, the esoteric ruler, is Saturn the same as the hierarchical ruler of the rising sign. So Saturn had to be tremendously important in his chart, and he did give us all these physical laws, including, especially for every action there is an opposite and equal reaction. He gave us an interpretation in physics of the psychological law of karma. So it certainly worked out in his particular case. When we come to the sign Scorpio, Mars rules twice. The Mars of desire initially, and the Mars of valor and heroism and the self-sacrifice for the disciple, where you're willing for a cause or an ideal under the sixth ray to sacrifice yourself. And finally, Mercury is the hierarchical ruler, speaking of the great illumination that can be achieved in Scorpio. Scorpio is associated with the illumination phase of meditation. Leo concentration, Virgo meditation, Libra contemplation, Scorpio illumination, Sagittarius inspiration. Five stages of meditation related to the five signs from Leo through Sagittarius, and of course followed by initiation. Mercury then is the great planet of the human creative hierarchy, the fourth creative hierarchy. We are to become Mercury. We are to become intermediaries between the high and the low. We are to become harmony through conflict. Mercury is to take the place of the moon. The moon, all of our lunar vehicles, falls in Scorpio, which means their power is greatly reduced, and Mercury, the great illuminator, a very occult planet connected with the third ray, not only the fourth ray, connected with the Buddha, connected with the illumination of the Buddha, probably connected in a way with the cosmic touch the Buddha received from the cosmic mental plane. I wouldn't be surprised if Mercury wasn't connected with that. So Scorpio, which begins life in the dark, transits into the light, the illumination of Mercury. And we do know that Mercury is also connected with the Buddha and thus with Taurus, an important planet in relation to Taurus, though not one of the rulers. We get to Sagittarius, and the conventional Jupiter is there, expanding one's horizons, constantly leaving home, as it were, constantly widening the range of one's rangings. Okay, then the Earth, this is the esoteric ruler. It's the consciousness of the sacredness of Earth. It is the appreciation of the beauty of Earth and the path towards Earth's sacredness. The global consciousness of the Sagittarian makes them particularly ecologically aware. They range the entire planet or various spheres, and so they are understanding the fact that nothing occurs in isolation, and that the Earth must be well treated and led through human effort and the effort of still higher beings along a particular path which will make of it a sacred planet. Interestingly enough, Sagittarians are often interested in healing the material aspect of man through the right type of activity. The Earth has that third-ray quality, the active quality, and Sagittarius, the sign which is most associated with the physical aspect. Aries, the first fire sign, fire. Leo, second fire sign, soul. Third, Sagittarius, body. So Earth, body, and Sagittarius go together, and making sure that this body, the Earth, the vehicle of our planetary logos, is in good shape. This is taking care of the immediate earth, making sure it's vital, because the earth so much stands for the vital body, whereas the moon perhaps a bit more for the outer crust, the dense physical vehicle. Mars, a non-sacred planet, is the hierarchical ruler, just as it is in Pisces, interestingly enough. So Gemini, Sagittarius, and Pisces have non-sacred planets for the hierarchical ruler. Interestingly, with Gemini, it is a sign of great vitality and youthfulness and non-aging. You know, the Gemini people seem to stay young forever. And interestingly enough, its hierarchical ruler Earth is associated with the vital body, which, when kept vital, keeps the appearance and the general expression youthful. That's a sort of a concrete expression of a high matter. Mars is not just the planet of desire, as we find in Scorpio, but it's particularly the planet of the reorientation of desire towards aspiration. And here we have Mars reorienting the lunar lords, which are elementals in a way, and helping them to move into the Deva kingdom gradually and into the animal and human kingdoms. One of the ways in to the animal and thus the human kingdom from the moon chain is via these lunar lords, which eventually are reoriented via Mars and are given the chance to rise. Mars is a rising planet, as it were, as its glyph indicates. So there is the aspiration of the lunar lords indicated here, and in general, fiery aspiration and militancy in Sagittarius, the willingness to self-immolate. You know how the six-ray souls, Sagittarius being the major sign of the sixth ray, choose the path of liberation, which is immolative. Every type of causal body is destroyed in a different way, and the sixth ray type of causal body is destroyed by fire. So Mars must be intimately related, and the lunar lords burn up, and so does the causal body. Mars is involved. Capricorn, we have a double Saturn, not just the hard fate and material living of the conventional interpretation of Saturn, but adherence to law under Capricorn and fulfillment of karmic debt consciously undertaken in a lawful manner. Venus rules the hierarchy of solar angels, which Capricorn also rules, and Venus is the symbol, as the hierarchical ruler in Capricorn, of the third initiation, or light upon the mountaintop, the triumph of the soul of Venus over Mars. Mars rules the entire personality and every vehicle within that personality, and Venus indicates the triumph of the soul over that personality. So Venus is a very high planet. The Venus in Capricorn rulership is perhaps not the very highest, because Venus in Pisces shows a completely successful redemption of all of the dweller, and then the solar angels are free to be released. Pisces is always the sign of release, and to return to the heart of the sun. Both Pisces and Venus related to the heart. So Venus, a great luminosity achieved on top of the mountain. Now, you know, it can also mean social climbing. You know, it can be using your attractive powers and your charm and all that to gain a high position in society, or to marry well, or all of that kind of thing. It means many things. The beauty of the archetype. We'll go over some of the meanings. I have extracted the meanings of planets in signs on three levels, for the ordinary man, for the disciple, and for the high initiate. And I'd like to go over that with you at some point. This is all written out on Makara, and I haven't really quite finished all of them, but maybe if I'm forced to talk about them, as talking seems to be faster and time is short, maybe I'll be able to complete some of the indications. of these rulerships that I've been hoping to write about. With Aquarius, we have Uranus, and not to forget Saturn as the orthodox ruler as well. The conventional Aquarian does exist, Saturn in Aquarius, but there's also the unconventional Saturn not going along with the normal, unconventional Aquarian not going along with the trend of things, and that's the more individualistic Uranus. This is where you find your individualism and express it, but you may be expressing the same type of individualism as many others. So many offbeat groups have a lot of people that apparently do the same thing, and they think they're being very, very individual. They are Uranian, and yet they are conforming to each other in a way. Jupiter is the esoteric ruler for the disciple, giving the bounty of group consciousness, the love, wisdom, energy uniting people, the ability to expand consciousness together, the realization that group consciousness can always perceive more than the individual can if it is a true group and the consciousness is the soul consciousness. So this is the great bounty, the cornucopia, the higher type of blessing and beneficence of Aquarius, pouring out for many and hoping to lift all rather than lift one, you know. Aquarius is not so discriminate about how it pours out its blessings. Anyone is free to receive them, and Jupiter is generous too. So somehow it's a very generous position on a lower turn of the spiral. It just can mean success with groups and big groups. I've seen people that, you know, somehow are involved with large organizations and do well there, having Jupiter in Aquarius. But there are all many ranges of interpretations, and well, we'll have to take them into consideration too. We're interested in esoteric astrology, but esoteric astrology includes exoteric astrology. DK said there would be a split between astrologers of the future. Some would be particularly handling the personality from an exoteric point of view, and others would be interested in the soul. But what I have seen about this is that the truly esoteric astrologer has to know something about exoteric astrology, because we want to transform people's more normal situations into spiritual possibilities. Out of the normal situations can come the development of spiritual possibilities. Okay, here comes the moon, an interesting, also an exoteric non-sacred. It's a non-sacred planet in a hierarchical position. Well, there are five, actually. I just mentioned the Earth and Mars and Pluto, but I should have included the Moon and the Sun. I should have included Aquarius and Leo. For the non-sacred planets veiled by their rulers, the Sun veiling a non-sacred planet of the second ray, and the Moon veiling a non-sacred fourth ray planet. But really what's behind the Moon here are three planets, and what we're talking about here is the transfiguration of the personality. The transfiguration can occur in Capricorn, it can occur in Aquarius, can occur in Aries, in Leo. There are a number of signs which are conducive to the transfiguration. The whole idea of being a rich young man is very connected with Aquarius. Like you would say, Sir Thomas More, eventually an Arhat, the man for all seasons. He had this sense of universality about him. He was certainly an Aquarian, and now they say, it is said that he is a master, kind of named as Sir Thomas, in the third of the Initiate books, The Initiate in the Dark Cycle. But the Moon then represents Vulcan, Neptune, and Uranus, and the transformation of all the three vehicles that occurs in the transfiguration. So there is a great vibrational elevation of these three vehicles signalized by the Moon as the ruler. All the lunar vehicles are transformed, and they are rendered responsive to the great radiation of the head center in Aquarius. Aquarius, I think, rules the entire head center in a certain sense, as does Uranus in a certain sense, with Neptune ruling the 12 golden white petals at the center of the head center, and probably Pisces related to that as well, because it's considered the major head part of the head center. But anyway, this great bounty is pouring forth, and all of the vehicles are raised. Notice that in Cancer, the moon is singular, and it has a lot to do with the dense physical vehicle, and perhaps with the emotions as well, to a degree. In Virgo, the moon is dual. It is Vulcan and Neptune. It is a kind of a union of the purification of both the physical etheric vehicle and the astral vehicle. And in Aquarius, the moon is triple. It is veiling all three planets related to all three lunar vehicles. And we're not just dealing with purification now, we're dealing with transfiguration. We're dealing with a very high vibration, an elevation of vibration until it becomes very high, and you have transfigured consciousness within very responsive vehicles, and the individual is indeed the rich young man. Now that, you know, doesn't mean that every time you have the moon in Aquarius, you're talking about the transfigured personality. You're oftentimes talking about the scattering of energies, the interest in group response, deviation from the norm, sort of an instinctive deviation from the norm. There are many, mentalization, a flight from emotion. We're talking about many things with the moon in Aquarius, and we can be talking about emotional ups and downs as well. Finally, we get to Pisces. Its rulers are Jupiter and a double Pluto. Jupiter here standing for helpfulness and benevolence, but also the possibility of being engulfed by matter, swallowed by it. You know, the whale swallows Jonah, the whale of great size. Jupiter swallows Jonah, and a person is completely trammeled and captivated by matter. But Pluto brings detachment. First, the personal detachment, which is a kind of death to all of that involvement with matter, and then a very spiritual detachment where we have Aries, Pluto, Shambhala. The Pluto is instrumental in detaching the true soul from its vehicles, and really ultimately detaching the monad from its vehicles. So the monad, the spirit, knows itself to be itself, and is now detached. Its relationship with matter and form is entirely changed, and it has, in a way, died to the lure of matter. The shears have cut the relationship between spirit and matter, but of course that relationship will never really be cut. At least the consciousness is saved from being engulfed by spirit, by matter. Okay, you know, I've done five of these today. This is the fifth, so I'm probably losing my voice a little bit. Couldn't quite do sixes yesterday. Days are different. And pretty soon there'll be some music on the horizon, which will not make it possible to do more. But in any case, we are rolling along, it feels like. We have a tabulation 7 here. We call it unorthodox. It involves the hierarchical rulers and the relationship of constellations based upon hierarchical, the rays of hierarchical rulers. I do believe that's what it is. So we have the usual thing, constellation, ruler, ray, and related to. Okay, maybe I'll pull that back a little bit. Okay. Well, the constellation is Aries. It's hierarchically ruled by Uranus, the final burning ground. We're given a seventh ray meaning of Uranus. And since there are no other of the major planets being on the seventh ray, although with 115 planets in our solar system or more, some of them have to be on the seventh ray, and a number of asteroids and planets like Jupiter, for instance, have seventh ray components. But anyway, out of the usual planets, none other are related to the seventh ray, and so Aries is related to no other constellation in relation to the hierarchical ruler. Taurus has Vulcan as its hierarchical ruler, and Pisces has Pluto. So they have the same ray, and we see that Taurus and Pisces are related. We've seen that with the esoteric, in relation to the ray of the esoteric ruler as well. When it comes to Gemini, the ray relationship is Gemini hierarchical ruler of the Earth, hierarchical ruler of Gemini, and Saturn, third ray Saturn, hierarchical ruler of Libra. So Gemini and Libra now are related, whereas when dealing with the esoteric rulers, they were not related to any other constellations. We have the word none for them, just like we have the word none for Aries. When it comes to Neptune and its relationship to Cancer, it's a sixth-ray planet. That's how DK considers it. He doesn't consider its second-ray monadic nature in these contexts, because that's probably very, very high and beyond the need to consider at this stage. When dealing with the esoteric rulers, we had Neptune related to Scorpio, because Mars was the ruler of Scorpio, esoterically. But now here, Mars is the hierarchical ruler of Sagittarius, sixth-ray Mars, sixth-ray Neptune, so we have Cancer and Sagittarius related hierarchically. And this is interesting, we have to consider this in terms of the hierarchies. Cancer, the ruler of the fifth almost liberated hierarchy, and Sagittarius, the ruler of the lunar lords. The soul is related to the astral body, and foremost among the lunar lords are the astral lunar lords, because of the power of the astral body in our particular solar system. So let's just say that we are trying to raise Mars into Neptune. Mars is objective and full of blood, and Neptune subjective and full of life. So we're trying to reorient the lunar lords towards the higher Christ potentials, which are ruled by the hierarchy of Cancer veiling the Christ. You know, we'd have to contemplate these. These are relationships, and we have to look at the sixth manifested creative hierarchy in relation to the fifth almost liberated hierarchy, which is still, however, focused on the cosmic physical plane, even though it's not considered a manifested creative hierarchy. Now we come to Leo. Leo is ruled by the Sun, whatever it veils, you know, it veils Uranus here, but we're not considering that, we're just considering the second-ray Sun. And Virgo, on the monadic plane, ruling the divine builders, is ruled by second-ray Jupiter, the seven formative sounds in this seventh hierarchy counting down, but second counting down from the cosmic physical plane. So now we have a Leo-Virgo relationship, and that relationship is between the first two hierarchies, the hierarchy of divine lives and the hierarchy of divine builders. And they are the two, in a way, esoteric hierarchies on the cosmic physical plane, because the first two planes, the logoic and monadic, or the first two planes of any seven, are always considered esoteric. And the five Brahmic planes are considered exoteric. So we have an esoteric relationship, and I think everyone will recognize here that we're dealing with the two signs or constellations that are the embodiment of the Sphinx. So perhaps a great riddle can be answered when we understand the prototypes of the monads and the divine lives. Perhaps something can be understood about the way the solar logos and the planetary logos relate, or solar logos and planetary logoi, because I think that the monads are found on every planet, so we cannot just confine them to Earth. In other words, how do these two great beings, the grand heavenly man and the heavenly man, relate to each other? In the Leo-Virgo relationship, perhaps we can find this. I think this will be my last one tonight. Then we have Libra and Saturn. That's a repeat here. They have the third ray. Hierarchical Saturn ruling Libra, hierarchical Earth ruling Gemini. And Libra and Gemini, you know, they are related to the fusing of dualities. Gemini always relates to the establishing of dualities, and Libra to their fusion. Now, Gemini is the ruler of the fourth liberated creative hierarchy. Desire for duality, and Libra is the ruler of the triple flowers, the first of the Brahmic hierarchies. They're called the lesser builders, but they're really pretty great. And they are, we're dealing here with duality on the cosmic astral plane, and we're dealing with triplicity below, because Libra is, or the hierarchy of Libra is animating the triadal vehicles, providing the triadal fields in which man can express. So we have a 2 and a 3. Scorpio is related to Aquarius here. Mercury, the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio, Mercury and Scorpio both related to the fourth creative hierarchy, and the Moon is the hierarchical ruler of Aquarius, and it's the fourth ray Moon. That's how it's considered. So the Scorpio hierarchy is human, and the Aquarian hierarchy is the very lowest, and that's interesting. The very lowest hierarchy, the elemental lives, the baskets of nourishment, the vital life of the atoms and the small constituents of matter. So it does look like humanity, the fourth creative hierarchy, must go all the way down to the bottom of the cosmic physical plane and there deal even with the redemption of matter, the elevation of the mineral kingdom. There is much about humanity that is the stone. It's called the living stone, not the fiery stone. And the elemental lives, the lowest elements of matter, they are most related to the mineral kingdom. So we have this relationship through concretion with the idea of the stone involved. There's great power in this seventh and lowest creative hierarchy, and man has to master that. He's already coming in touch with it. Will it destroy him via Scorpio, or will it liberate him? This is a question. We have the lunar lords here, Sagittarius, being ruled by Mars. Sagittarius and Mars, both associated with the lunar lords, or the vitality of the elemental forms which man uses, and via the sixth ray they are related, so we've discussed that relationship between the lunar lords and the Christ-like hierarchy on the verge of liberation into the cosmic astral plane. Capricorn is ruled by a fifth ray Venus, hierarchically, bringing us illumination, and since we have no other planet, ruling planet, which conveys the fifth ray, at least not the normal planets, then Capricorn, like Aries, is hierarchically not related to any other constellation. we've already gone over Aquarius and Scorpio via the fourth ray Moon and the fourth ray Mercury, and we've already gone over Pisces in its relation to Taurus via first ray Pluto and first ray Taurus. So, you know, great pondering is required as we look at the relationship of these hierarchies as they are related by rays. The signs which rule them are related by rays, and therefore the hierarchies are related by rays as well. All right, I think, yes, we are there. We are definitely there. Ending our esoteric astrology adventure, number 31, and we will, whatever page it is, I think, here we go again, huh? Page something, page 68. All right, so we have we've done page 66, I believe, to 68. If that is incorrect, I will correct it, but I don't want to take time to do it right now. 25 July, that's not July, 25 July 11. And we will together sound our closing mantram, the great invocation. I suppose by now everyone should know this, but on the off chance that somebody is coming into these webinars without knowing the great invocation, I think it is wise to display it. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. For this evening, and we will continue on page 68, it looks like, Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 32. We are making our way fairly well now through the through the introduction, and I hope I have a few more days to continue blitzing forward, not like a Pisces would do, but like Aries would do, a tropical Aries. And we will continue later. Okay, see you all. See you all. Study hard.